week, the North Carolina chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council is presenting awards for the best examples of green development across our region. And in advance of that, we're going to talk about who in our area has embraced the movement and about what kind of impact that choice is having on the environment and on the bottom line. Gil Holland is a developer, filmmaker, and green development activist, and the keynote speaker at the Green Gala this Friday from 5:30 to 10:30 at the Ritz-Carlton. We'll have information about that on our website at WFAE.org. From Davidson, he now lives and works in Louisville, where he has become known for saving and preserving old neighborhoods there and turning them into sustainable areas. He joins us by phone in advance of his visit back home. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Nice to have you here. And with us in our... I'm sorry.
Nice to be back in Mecklenburg County virtually.
Yay, okay. And with us in our Spirit Square studio is Emily Schofield, Executive Director of the North Carolina Chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council. She's been working as an advocate for sustainability and green building for 15 years, including as project manager for the LEED Certified Habitat for Humanity home built during the 2012 Democratic National Convention here. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Also with us is Scott Tew, founder and executive director of the Center for Energy Efficiency and Sustainability at Ingersoll Rand. His division supports all of the company's strategic brands, including Club Car, Train, and Thermo King. He's also responsible for the company's sustainability initiatives, which have exceeded their long-term goals in energy use and waste reduction since the formulation of his unit in 2010. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thank you.
When we talk about green building, one of the terms we hear a lot about is LEED, L-E-E-D certification. LEED stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. Who provides that certification and what is it based upon? Emily.
The U.S. Green Building Council created LEED in 2000. It created a separate arm, the Green Building Certification Institute, that actually verifies the information submitted and issues the certifications in a variety of levels from certified, silver, gold, and platinum.
And they did this in 2000, and in the interim, 16 years, how many buildings do you know of have been either built from the ground up or rehabbed to take advantage of those certifications?
In North Carolina, we have over 1,100 projects that are registered for LEED. That means they are in progress for achieving that certification, and there are over 1,800 certified projects.
Now, there are different levels, as you mentioned, from what's the first level?
Certified.
Certified to platinum. What are the differences? What are you looking for? Whoever certifies these buildings at these various levels, what has to be in a certain level? I'm not sure how to ask the question. It's too complicated to get an answer to. Go ahead.
I've got your answer. The beauty of the LEED rating system is that it provides a menu. And within the LEED certification system, there are approximately five core categories that no matter what rating system you use, you're going to have those same categories. Within those categories, there might be one to three prerequisites. So you must complete these objectives in order to achieve a certification at any level. Beyond that, the project team gets to select what makes the most sense for their building type, whether it's the use of the building, the type of the building, or their budget. They can look at whatever makes the most sense to that project to achieve the objectives of their design.
Mm-hmm. And the reason they want to take advantage of this is what? The average builder, developer, architect, designer, owner.
LEED certification is a third-party rating system, and so it is a way to verify, not just say, that the building is designed, built, and operated in a way that saves energy, saves water, reduces indoor air contaminants, and increases the beneficial aspects of the space mm-hmm. to the occupants.
So the mission of the U.S. Green Building Council is to improve the quality of life by transforming design so that, I'm quoting from your website here, by transforming design so that our children and grandchildren will grow up in green and healthy homes, conserving water and energy. What is a green and healthy home?
A green and healthy home is one that provides a clean indoor air environment through the selection of products that you use. Everything from flooring, wall covering, cabinetry, countertops. Also, it takes into account the air quality. How much turnover is there? How much fresh air is brought into the space? How much old air is evacuated out? And water efficiency. And so those are the things that help a home become healthier to occupy. We as Americans spend 90% of our time indoors. And so those are the aspects that we look at to try to help a homeowner achieve a healthier living environment.
So I don't know that I have ever been aware of an individual family home, new or previously constructed and remodeled, that has received any sort of LEED certification. I suppose if you're living in a condominium building, multifamily building, whether it's condominium or apartments, you might be able to determine that that has gotten LEED certification. Are there single-family homes that have been LEED certified in this region?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've got several examples to share with you locally. Neighborhood development is one criteria that the LEED rating system created that looks not just at the single-family home, but at the community surrounding the neighborhood. And Celadon on 4th Street achieved that certification early on. Mm-hmm. Two projects are now registered, Brightwalk and the Renaissance. Affordable Housing has embraced this model because it works for them. They provide affordable housing and healthy housing. Building to LEED standards residentially provides a way to control or help to reduce the utility expenses. So for affordable housing, that is very important. Charlotte Housing Authority and Habitat for Humanity of Charlotte, Matthews, Davidson, and our towns have all used LEED for their projects.
So give me some examples. I'm not going to ignore all the other guests we have here for much longer, but just give me some examples of products that go into a home that would help that home, single family or otherwise, achieve LEED status. Because you mentioned flooring and walls and air exchange, etc. What would go into that home?
Talking about air first, the type of filter. So the size of the pore size of the filter is going to eliminate and prevent certain toxins and air pollutants from entering the space or remove those from the home mm-hmm. through the air filtration system. So that's one way, one product, air filters. Another is the adhesives that are used to apply flooring or wall coverings. You want to pick adhesives that do not contain volatile organic compounds or other harsh toxins. Also, paints. You are now able to buy paints at a competitive, it's easier to find non-VOC and low VOC paints than it is to find those that have high toxins in them. And this is all a result of the green building movement.
And do they hold up as well, last as long, keep their color, have the ability to be cleaned from little baby's fingerprints and stuff like that, as a normal paint would do?
They do. And one wonderful thing about the green building movement mm-hmm. is that we have created an industry. This is a wonderful example of the free market economy, that by owners wanting LEED certified properties, manufacturers have innovated and created new technologies and new products in the marketplace that meet these standards, but also meet the quality that the user expects. And so the green building movement is in, you know, its second and third decade. And so what we have is second and third generations of these products that keep improving with quality and endurance and usability.
I think most people are very familiar with the Energy Star program, because when you buy an appliance, it's rated with an Energy Star label. LEED is more than Energy Star, but what role does Energy Star play in LEED certification, if any?
It does play a role. It is a requirement that buildings achieve, in any property, achieve a certain Energy Star score. And that helps to ensure that the property is going to manage its energy usage in a responsible manner and hopefully reduce the amount of energy consumed and reduce those utility bills.
But if you are are individual products, you mentioned adhesives, you mentioned flooring, you mentioned paint. You can look for low or no VOC paint. But when it comes to flooring, when it comes to the adhesive that you put down those engineered wood floors, for instance, with, are they marked as LEED certified at the hardware store or at the flooring store? Or do you just have to know the brand and the model number, and that's LEED certified? How do you know?
That's a great question. You do have to read and do a bit of research to make sure that you are purchasing products that meet your criteria.
Why don't you give the good housekeeping seal or whatever you want to call your seal to that product to make it easy on us?
There are a number of rating systems out there that certify the product.
Okay.
LEED certifies the property.
Okay.
But there are a multitude of other. Green Seal is one example of those ratings that you can look for that are stamped on a product.
Okay. Now, obviously, this is a good thing to do for health reasons and environmental reasons. Scott, you see it as an imperative. Scott works for Ingersoll Rand, and in the blog for that company, you say, the largest energy consumers in the world are big buildings. 70% to 80% increase within the global urban population in the next 35 years. That means the demand for energy cannot be ignored. And you you write about the energy consumption of these buildings in terms of their lighting and power needs for computing and things like that. But the biggest draw in all these buildings is the HVAC system.
That's right.
Talk about that.
Well, I mean, you just mentioned, why should anyone care about buildings, whether we're talking about cities or a nation or an individual homeowner? It's a big impact on our environment. 68% of electricity in America is used to power homes and commercial buildings like the one we're in. 12% of the water in the nation is used up by buildings and building occupants. So big impact. So how do you think about buildings in a way that what we do next, what we do tomorrow and today and next year has a less impact than what we've done in the past? And the LEED system really helps us do that. You know, here's the great thing about the LEED system. It's focused a lot on the systems of a building. So, you know, whether we're talking about your home that has a water plumbing system, the air system that you mentioned, the HVAC system, the insulation and roofing system, all these are systems. And the LEED framework, this LEED menu approach, lets you think through all of those systems and how do you design them, how do you apply them to the building, and how do you operate them in a way that you get the least amount of waste.
If big buildings are the biggest consumers of energy, because right. they are enormous, they're, you know, 50 stories tall, some of these buildings, and hundreds of thousands of square
right.
feet. But then when you think about neighborhoods of single-family mm-hmm. homes, they must be – the neighborhoods themselves must be equal to those big buildings.
Yeah, exactly.
So do we need to be thinking about that in our individual lives as well?
Well, in some – we are thinking about it at the neighborhood level. Emily gave an example. And there are some construction companies like Lennar who are actually building full neighborhoods, and they're thinking about they're using this LEED system to help them design and build homes that are using much less energy over time, but also there's a lot of less waste up front in the construction period. The other thing about LEED is that there's a lot of thought before construction, during construction, and when it's operated over the life of the building.
When we come back, I want to talk to Gil Holland, who is in Louisville this morning, but he's from Davidson, and he credits living in Davidson with some of his thrust toward green building and revitalization in that city. We'll come back and talk about that in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFA. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Actors Theater of Charlotte, presenting the world premiere of The Patron Saint of Losing Sleep, winner of the third annual New Voices Festival. Take a hallucinatory journey now through September 26th. Tickets at atcharlotte.org. And Bojangles, featuring the smoked sausage biscuit, hickory smoked sausage on a made-from-scratch buttermilk biscuit, available all day at area Bojangles. Well, the extended drought means lake and river levels are low, and with low levels come increased concerns about water quality. Fall is upon us, so weather patterns may change. But in the meantime, we get an update on the state of our rivers and lakes from the perspective of the Catawba Riverkeeper. We talk about the drought, water consumption, our dependence economically and otherwise on water, and we'll get some updates on coal ash, stormwater, and more tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, scientists have discovered a new human-like species in a South African cave. It shares characteristics with modern-day people. How the findings could change our understanding of evolution and what it means to be human.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about LEED certification and what it all means and who's doing it particularly well in this this area and why. And does it really not cost more? We'll talk about that as we go through the program as well. In advance of the Green Gala, which is the Sustainable Business Awards by the U.S. Green Building Council. It'll be happening this Friday in a green building at the Ritz-Carlton. We have information about that on our website. Emily Schofield is with us, the Executive Director of the North Carolina Chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council. Scott Tew, Founder and Executive Director of the Center for Energy, Development, and Sustainability at Ingersoll Rand in Davidson. And a Davidson boy, Gil Holland, is with us. He's a green developer in Louisville, Kentucky, and the keynote speaker at the gala. You're also an award-winning film producer, Gil, nominated for the Spirit Award. For those who don't know, that's kind of the Oscar of independent film. You're a record producer, but your work with sustainable real estate development in Louisville has been described as visionary. How did that part of your life begin, and why?
That's funny story. I was actually at a wedding in North Carolina and met a Kentucky girl who dropped the word sustainability on me, and I'd never even heard the word sustainability, and that was about 11 years ago, and I kind of thought it was the sexiest word I'd ever heard. I figured I'd need to know what it was, and one thing led to another. An early date, we went to Seattle and visited the public library, which was at the time the only green building I'd ever heard of, and then we got married, moved to Louisville, and you know, a piece of real estate is a real property, and a film script or a music score is an intellectual property. So, you know, you go from being a producer of movies to being a developer of real estate. It's kind of the same. It's the same business. It's just one you can see, touch, and feel, and the other one you watch or listen to.
As you say, you never heard of the word sustainability until you met your now wife, but you're also described as an early adopter of LEED. I think in 2007 you turned a 119-year-old building in downtown Louisville into Kentucky's first commercial building certified as LEED Platinum, which is the highest level that you can attain. Why did you take that on?
Right. Well, it was kind of a good story, and it happened basically organically. We were pregnant at the same time we bought this building, and you know, when you start thinking about your child and being, you know, part of the solution, there's an issue with climate change, and we're all part of the problem, obviously. So how do you start being part of the solution, and what are you going to, you know, leave to your kids in terms of legacy, and you know, do you want to leave your kids a giant electricity bill, or so you know. You know, and when you buy a building, I've never owned a building before, so when you buy a building, it doesn't come with miles per gallon like a car. So I'm like, wow, what's the building going to cost to run? Like, what's the HVAC? And, you know, Kentucky, since we're a coal state, we have remarkably low energy cost in terms of per kilowatt hour. You know, a lot of costs are externalized. So, you know, energy usage, there's no concept of conservation in Kentucky because everything's just seen as being cheap. But energy costs go up about 7% every year. So that means they double every 10 years. And, you know, minimum wage doesn't double every 10 years. My salary doesn't double every 10 years. So I started running numbers, and I started telling the architect, well, you know, let's have a green roof and let's have solar panels. Let's, you know, I'm an independent film producer. I want to be an independent energy producer, too. I feel like 20 years from now, just like 20 years ago, nobody had laptops and cell phones. Now everybody does. I think 20 years from now, every building is going to be a mini power plant. That being said, we're only 73% self-sufficient. We are still tapped into the grid, so we still draw.
Well, now, as you say, in Kentucky, you have a lot of cheap power because you're a coal country, and it seems, I guess there's a downside to that because you have to burn coal to produce electricity, and that's really one of the dirtier ways to manufacture electricity. But power is cheap. So why go to the trouble in 2007 when solar power was still pretty expensive to outfit your building with that when power is cheap?
Yeah. I mean, that was one of those things, you know, sometimes you do things because you have to show some leadership. And if people that have a little bit of extra financing for a building can afford it, you should. But also, this is a building we weren't going to flip. So, you know, traditional developers, they want to flip their buildings 3 to 7 years, double their money. Like, we're like, this is the green building. This is the greenest. You know, we didn't even aim for platinum at the beginning. And finally, our architect was like, you realize if you do all these things, you're going to be LEED Platinum off the charts. And so we were like, okay, let's go for it. And, you know, I did the math. And if you're in the building, you know, the math for us on the solar was about a 20-year return. And there's accelerated depreciation, and there's cost segregation, and, you know, there's a federal tax incentive at the time. So it's basically paid for itself, and then, it increases its value 7% every year as it keeps pumping out the kilowatt hours.
So as a pioneer, were there naysayers? I guess you're the owner of the building, so I guess you didn't have partners who were...
My wife and I did it together, okay. And... you know, the first year, there was over 10,000 people came to the building, and I think a lot of people thought they were going to be visiting a spaceship. And then when they got in the building, they were like, well, this is just a lovely, great building, and it smells so fresh. And, you know, I always say, like, new car smell, that's bad, because that means you're smelling volatile organic compounds. You want to, you know, you want to be in, like, a treehouse. So we have, you know, no VOCs in our paints and our glues. We have all reclaimed timber. The building's 125 years old now, and you know the wood that was used in building the building, that wood came from trees that were alive when George Washington was president, because the joist in 120 year old buildings are 16 inches wide, so we have amazing timber, we have amazing kids that came by, so tons of local developers started getting excited about it. So there's been a lot more LEED buildings, and you know other people said, well, I'm going to use all the LEED ideas and just not bother with getting certified, and I think that's okay too. So LEED has provided great leadership in helping people know what to look for. Like, I didn't know water was a part of a sustainable building.
So how much more expensive was it to turn this building around, this old building around, and make it LEED certified platinum versus just, you know, putting in some new paint and redoing the floors and maybe putting a new air conditioning unit on the roof? How much more expensive was it?
We think at the time, because, you know, solar is now about a quarter of what it was when we bought. You know, we bought $150,000 of solar panels. We did 13 geothermal wells. That was about another 100 and something thousand. But, you know, it was a six-year return on the geothermal. We figured it was about a 20-year return on the solar panels. The green roof was about a six-year return. And, you know, we have reduced employee sick days. If you remember that Dire Straits song, Industrial Disease, like people don't get industrial disease when they're in a light-filled, you know, we barely ever turn on the lights in the building because there's all natural lighting. People are just happy. We have increased worker productivity. And we also charge literally twice as much per square foot rent because people don't have energy bills, and people are happy to pay it. So for us, it all worked out. I'm Scotch Irish, and you know I'm all about the numbers.
Okay, is it more expensive, Emily, to rehab an older building that was built in the last century, or even the century before that, the 19th century, and make it LEED certified at any particular level than it is to do it from brand new construction from the ground up?
With historic preservation, you obviously have special circumstances that you have to meet. Certain features of the building that you cannot alter.
Mm-hmm.
So that provides challenges. Mm-hmm. The way that project teams approach historic preservation and LEED certification in conjunction with one another is through advanced planning. And through that advanced planning, they are able to talk through all of the obstacles and objectives and goals for the project, the LEED requirements, and then what's going to work for the newly revised space, and achieve that in a very cost-effective manner. Mm-hmm. So the answer is, with pre-planning, rehabbing a historic structure does not necessarily have to mean it's extremely more expensive or any more expensive than LEED certification of a new property.
So when you say the...
You know, can I just say one thing about it? So there's an interesting link between preservation of old buildings and green buildings, too, which I didn't know at the time. But, you know, an existing building is inherently the greenest building because it already exists. Its carbon footprint's been paid off. If it's an old building, it's made out of bricks and wood, which are basically sustainable products. But also, you create more jobs because the money going into retrofitting and renovating an old building, 70% of that money goes to labor because you don't need to buy as many materials. So there's actually a job creation related to preservation and a sustainability link to old buildings as well.
Hmm. So you mentioned how nice the air smells in that building, how people comment on how fresh it smells. Why? Is that because you have low VOC, no VOC paints and adhesives and the right kind of flooring? The flooring was there for 119 years and it's made out of wood.
We had to remill. I mean, there'd been fires in the building. There was, you know, there was the coal chute. You could see where there'd been a fire in the basement. I mean, it looked like the building when we bought it was completely falling down. It looked like the film set of like one of the Saw franchise movies. So we had to remill all the wood, and we reused all the wood in the building. So I think part of it is also just about the air circulation. So, you know, in the summer, we take the cool air from the basement, and we cycle it all the way up to the third floor and then drop it, and it floats down, so natural cooling. And then in the winter, we do the opposite. We take the hot air from the third floor, take it down to the basement, and release it and let it float up.
Is that heating and cooling helped by an actual system that heats and cools the air? Okay,
all right.
Talk to me about, because one of the products that Ingersoll Rand is involved in is Trane, and they make air conditioners and heat pumps and furnaces and things like that. And we keep seeing as consumers, I'm going to bring it back down to the consumer level here, the SEER ratings on air conditioners, 13, 14, 16, 17. What does all that mean?
Yeah, it's very complicated. SEER for residential units, and it's really just it's sort of the Energy Star for air conditioning. It's a way to help consumers understand how efficient their units will be. So the higher the number, the more efficient your system would be.
Why not just make the most efficient unit and dispense with the SEER ratings?
Well, because people like customers like choices. People like this concept of good, better, best.
And what happens with the SEER rating, we're going to move back to LEED certification, but what happens with the SEER rating is that if you get a low SEER rating, it's not as efficient, but it's less expensive to install, probably more expensive to operate over time.
Correct, yeah.
Is the same true of LEED, more expensive to install but less expensive over time?
So, you know, I think Gil brought up a great point about one of the good things about LEED is that owners of buildings like his and others, home or commercial buildings, they get to choose what's important to them. Some think it's about energy savings, so they want to reduce cost over time. And you can do that using the LEED system. Mm-hmm. Some want to reduce all waste streams, so they want to use the least amount of water possible. Some really care about materials. Like Gil mentioned, these reclaimed old wood materials. That's very important to some building owners. The great thing about the LEED system is that no matter what your concern is, what your objective is, maybe you want occupants to be really comfortable and very productive. A university might really think that that's important. So no matter what your objective is, the LEED system can help guide you through with this menu of options, the things that you should really focus on. HVAC has to be a part of all of LEED buildings, though, we believe. Obviously, we own Trane Air Conditioning, but 50% of LEED points are related to your air conditioning system. That's because it is such a major component of any building, because it's the air we breathe. It's also the big energy-consuming system of the building, so it has to be the heart of every building's focus.
We're asking a social media question for people to respond to us on Twitter and Facebook and via email today. Should developers incorporate sustainability into their projects, even if it costs more? We want you to let us know about that. And David on Facebook writes, I would like to know what developers are doing about all the waste that is made in building a house. I see trailer-sized dumpster after dumpster of wood and cardboard and other materials that could be recycled, all headed to landfills. Is that the case? Is that where it's going? And what do you do about that?
Well, I'll jump in there. You know, one of the biggest things with the LEED certification is we had to literally keep track of every single thing we sent to landfill. And when you're doing that, you try not to send anything to landfill. So we reclaimed all the wood. I mean, I think for our entire project, we only had one dumpster go to landfill.
Yeah, we're actually renovating a building currently on our Davidson campus. Ingersoll Rand's got a large campus in Davidson, and we've been redoing many buildings. These are refurbishing 30-year-old buildings,
right,
expanding their footprint, meaning more floor space, more place for people, yet we're doing it with a much lower environmental impact. To Gil's point, the building that we're redoing currently, we've sent 61% less waste to the landfill than in other similar construction projects like this, the same size building. So there are certainly ways that you can.
How do you do it?
How do you do? You repurpose the
because when you're working with wood and you're mitering corners and joints and things like that, there's a little these little pieces that of unusable wood are going to be left over. It seems to me.
Yeah, but you can find vendors though who will take those pieces and repurpose them for other projects elsewhere in the community. So a partnership is important, but there are absolutely ways to do it, to Gil's point.
Okay.
And one of your biggest waste streams, so you mentioned the wood chips. Well, that's a very important waste stream that we would want to try to divert to an energy source because that can be utilized for pellets and energy burning. Now, where you really want to focus and where LEED is really beneficial with the waste reduction and waste diversion is with your bulkier items like concrete, bricks, block, asphalt, those types of materials that can be recycled or repurposed in different manners, depending on the creativity and the project team that is working on it. So concrete is one of our biggest streams that is recycled, and so that's one that you would want to keep out of the landfill, obviously, because it's so large.
I'm assuming that because the U.S. Green Building Council hands out these LEED certification certificates, and because you help people understand how to achieve those things, that you also have a list of things that people can do and go to repurpose. Do you? Or is this upon me as a developer or a builder or an architect to find these streams of ways to use these things in different streams, so to speak?
There's two different opportunities there. The greenhomeguide.org was created by the USGBC, and that's an excellent resource for our residential market to go to find resources to utilize these waste streams, as well as architects and builders to build the house that you want.
Okay.
Commercially, what we find is that there are a number of different forums available online through USGBC and through independent forums where you can find out these waste exchange programs.
Now, Louisville, go ahead, Gil. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, one of the other good things about LEED is that you're supposed to source everything from within 100 miles of your location. So, you know, people will be like, why don't you get that cheap, you know, sheetrock from China? And I'm like, well, the whole point is to create local jobs. Let's source materials. And the only thing we got that was more than 100 miles away was recycled. All of our insulation is recycled blue jean denim. And at the time, there was no company in Kentucky that made it, so we had to get it from Tennessee. But now the good thing is there's, you know, we've helped create a demand, and now you can also get recycled blue jean denim insulation right in the middle of New Lewis.
So this is not unlike the local food movement. What I'm hearing people say, the idea is to get your food from a 100-mile radius and no more than that and support local farmers because it creates jobs. You're talking about exactly the same thing in industry and building.
Exactly. And the great thing about the solar industry, which, you know, it's like the roofers and the electricians ended up fighting over who got to put on the solar panels because, you know, a green building, it's not like you send your building to Pakistan to get retrofitted. It is all boots on the ground.
All down here. Gil Hollins, the green developer in Louisville, Kentucky, will come back and talk more about green building and certification in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Park Sterling Bank, providing financial solutions for personal and business needs. Answers you can bank on. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Details at parksterlingbank.com. And James McElroy and Deal, for over a half century, providing legal services and counsel to individuals and businesses. JMDlaw.com. Deep in a South African cave, scientists have discovered a new human-like species which shares characteristics with modern people. How those findings could change our understanding of evolution and what it means to be human, the topic of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. You want to join our conversation about green building? Well, you can do so. Email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
No fall pledge drive? You could make that happen. Once again, we are encouraging you to pledge early and eliminate days of our 7-day fall membership campaign. In the past, thanks to you, we have reduced drives by almost half. Can you imagine eliminating even more? You can help make that a reality when you go online and contribute at WFAE.org and make your pledge. The clock is ticking, so let's make history and eliminate even more of the fall pledge drive. Maybe even all of it. It's up to you. Thanks.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. In advance of the Green Gala put on by the U.S. Green Building Council, North Carolina chapter at the Ritz on Friday night, we have Gil Holland, a green developer from Louisville, Kentucky. Actually, he grew up in Davidson. He's the keynote speaker for that. He's with us by phone. Scott Hugh is the founder and executive director of the Center for Energy Development and Sustainability at Ingersoll Rand in Davidson. And Emily Schofield is the executive director of the North Carolina chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council. Louisville is number 14 on the list of the top 20 greenest cities in America. That would mean that a lot of other people are following in your footsteps. Gil, are you driving this? Is something else driving this? What's driving this movement that got Louisville to number 14 on the list?
Well, I did work with the mayor to create the Office of Sustainability, which was the first time Louisville had one. I just think the climate change issue is getting more and more. We got crazy wildfires in California. We got crazy floods in Japan. So I do think there's just an inherent awareness, mm-hmm. and then a realization that, you know, we can all be part of the solution.
Now, North Carolina is actually seventh in the nation for the number of LEED certified buildings in the state, but we don't have a city in the top 20 list of the greenest cities in America. Is that because these buildings are scattered throughout the state with no critical mass in any one location?
Well, I think to be a green city, there's a lot of other factors besides your building portfolio that go into that criteria. So I think North Carolina is definitely forging ahead. And in the U.S. Green Building Council world, North Carolina is one of the leading chapters and one of the leading states in the green building and sustainability movement.
How do you explain that?
Our North Carolina chapter was created in 2005. We have over 900 individual members. We have over 113 corporate partners. And we are working across four regions of our state. We cover the entire state, but we have active hubs in Cape Fear, mm-hmm. Triangle, Triad, and Charlotte.
Now, Ingersoll Rand, you make a lot of different products. I'm not sure how many products you make, but you've been around forever. And you're the founder of the Center for Energy Efficiency and Sustainability. Why did the company decide that this is something that they needed to create, this division, and follow the rules that you guys are coming up with within the division? Why did they decide that was important?
Yeah, it's a good question. So 140-plus-year-old company, like mm-hmm. you mentioned, been around a long time, been solving big problems for a lot of industries. It's a diversified industrial company with brands as diverse as Club Car, the golf cart company, to Trane Air Conditioning, to the Ingersoll Rand brand, which is an industrial air compression brand that you would find driving robots in an automotive facility, for instance. Mm-hmm. But the company is really serious about sustainability and real-world benefits. You know, how do we actually change how we design our products to make them use less, waste less and use less energy?
Is that being driven by customer demand or by you simply wanting to put your name on something that's particularly good for the environment?
No, I think it's both. I think our customers expect more today. Customers are more progressive than ever. They're asking questions about what is the impact on climate or on resource use, meaning energy and water, and mm-hmm. also just about what happens at the end of it. These products that we sell them last 20 years, and we even have customers now wondering, what do I do at the end when it stops working? Do you take it back? Do I turn it in? So customers are thinking about the whole life cycle of a product, sort of like we're thinking now about buildings. You know, this whole what happens from construction to the end of the life of a building, and that's why we're really sold on the LEED system because it helps you think about the life cycle of a building or a product.
And your company, within the company itself, you've created these green teams, and I know other companies have done the same thing, but these green teams have changed how things work within the company and have done remarkable things in terms of saving energy, reducing waste. Talk about that.
Yeah, so what started as just a handful of employees who were well-meaning employees in far-flung offices, sales offices, and manufacturing centers who were just doing the right thing. Some were just trying to reduce the amount of paper that we use. Some were trying to reduce the energy by turning off lights. We kind of taken those groups and we've told them how important their collective work is. So we've recognized them. We've also began to add up their contributions and, you know, to our enterprise and our operations. It is a big deal. We're saving millions of gallons of water. We're saving lots of energy by changing how we behave as we operate and make products.
Now, a lot of new buildings you can build from the ground up and make them green and make them Energy Star certified and LEED certified, but not all of them. Excuse me, not all of these these buildings are new. Some of them are old, and in Charleston, South Carolina, they are number 3 on the list of the top 20 greenest cities in America. And Gil, you're involved in rehabilitating large, older areas of Louisville, not just this building we've been talking about. On your blog, you say some of your city's struggling neighborhoods are being eyed by you and others, and you've developed a place called New Lou, which sounds to me like Noda here in Charlotte. It's kind of it's called New Louisville, and it's a kind of an artsy district where you've rehabbed the whole area. Are you using LEED certification in all of those buildings in that area of the city? What are you doing?
Well, you know what? We're actually going a step further. We're trying to be the first existing neighborhood, I think, in America to be LEED certified as a neighborhood.
Mm.
So there was a block of 1860 buildings that was slated for demolition, and we just kept looking at them thinking, like, you know, people spend a lot of money going to Europe to see old buildings like this. Let's try to save these buildings. And we did, and, you know, there's a lot of young creative entrepreneurs, some startups, and, you know, there's now 15 local food restaurants in the area. So it's really become a super fun area, and I think, you know, the green building and now the LEED neighborhood process, you know, we're trying to be the first eco district in the state of Kentucky. So there's, you know, and we're thinking about our aggregate, you know, if we all get together, like, think about our energy cost as a neighborhood. Okay, well, let's go to the utilities and see how we can help them drive down that demand, you know, so that they can divert the energy they produce to, you know, the big manufacturing companies that need it at 2 o'clock, for example, on a July afternoon.
No, and I don't know what New Lou was like before you helped go in there and revitalize it, but I know that you're working on another area of Louisville called Portland, which was 30 feet underwater in the great flood of 1937 and never really recovered after all those years and became kind of a wasteland and also an area for very low-income people, and you're trying to revitalize that. Does that mean you're going after LEED certification in that area, or are you simply trying to gentrify that area?
Well, right now there's, you know, when I came to Louisville, I couldn't believe people were still talking about the flood of 37. and then you come to this one area called Portland, which was a separate city in 1811. You know, people would get out of the boat in Louisville and portage around to Portland neighborhood. And there's 1,400 vacant and abandoned properties. And, you know, we taxpayers own the water company and own the sewer company, so we've already invested the money to provide service to all these empty, underperforming lots. But there's buildings from 1830, there's beautiful old structures, lots of deferred maintenance. You know, I'd love to paint every roof white. You know, that right there in and of itself saves a ton of energy. And when people are on the lower income scale, you know, the cost of utilities going up 7% every year becomes an economic justice issue.
That's an interesting thing. You talk about painting roofs white, and most roofs in this country are probably very dark, gray, brown, black. Why do we do that still when we know that that is an energy drain? Why?
I know the average roof, you know, the average black tar roof is about 180 degrees in those hot summer months. And if you think about our green roof, the green roof is the same temperature as the outside air. So if it's 98 degrees, and then you can easily then see how the HVAC system doesn't have to work as hard to drop the temperature from 98 to 72 as opposed from 180 to 72.
And I'll jump in as well. I think that's part of what the U.S. Green Building Council has a mission to do, and that is to educate the community about the alternatives and the choices that they have that would help them to save money and help save natural resources and create a better indoor environment. And one of the ways that the chapter is doing that is through our awards program this Friday night, where we're recognizing individuals, companies like Ingersoll Rand, as well as properties developed.
Who's doing it particularly well in our region? In other words, I guess, who are you handing out to awards to?
Well, I'm not going to reveal who exactly is taking home the trophy. However, I will share that Crescent Communities has two projects being recognized. Habitat for Humanity of Charlotte, they are embarking on their 100th LEED home.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Our chapter helped them several years ago build the very first LEED home in their portfolio. They saw that that made sense, not only to their tight economic constraints, but also to the occupants that they are going to be owning those homes. The future of those people on fixed incomes and restricted incomes, the ability of them to have a healthy home mm-hmm. and a home that conserves resources is so beneficial and impactful. We're also recognizing MetLife, Red Hat, North Carolina DOT, and Ingersoll Rand. We've got some colleges that are going to be recognized. So it's a great cross-section of our community across the state that will be recognized on Friday.
Now, you're doing this, and Gil was talking about painting roofs white because white roofs reflect the heat back up and reduce the load on the HVAC systems. But you're having your gala at the Ritz-Carlton, and many people don't know this about the Ritz, but it's the first LEED Gold Certified Hotel in Charlotte, and really they don't know about the roof on the Ritz. Talk about the roof on the Ritz.
That's right, and more kudos to the Ritz-Carlton chain. This hotel here in Charlotte is the first LEED hotel in their portfolio.
Oh.
So kudos to them and to Bank of America for helping that become a reality. They have a green roof on their on one of their levels, yes.
Literally.
And the wonderful part, they also have beehives and herbs growing that the chefs use in their kitchen. So it's a wonderful way to share their sustainability initiatives with their guests.
When you say they have a green roof, they have a vegetated roof. They're growing sedum and herbs and all kinds of things on the roof. What does that do for the building?
Well, I'll answer a little bit, but I'm going to let our expert here answer as well. But initially, that helps reduce the heat that builds up inside the space, which therefore drives the amount of energy that you're using to cool the space.
Okay.
Scott?
And then there's also a big, you know, Louisville, we have a big combined sewer overflow issue. We have a $850 million EPA consent decree, and every bit of rainwater that falls on the green roof usually takes 24 hours to slowly get into the stormwater runoff system. So the more green roofs we have, the fewer taxpayer dollars we need to expanding sewage pipes underneath the streets.
Scott?
Yeah, and just some of this is almost common sense. Green roofs, as Gil said, you certainly lower the heat profile so the HVAC system has to work less, and it can provide these other benefits like we were just mentioning that Ritz-Carlton does. But painting it white, you know, that's such a simple thing. It's almost commonsensical. At the Building B at Ingersoll Rand's campus locally, we actually have an HVAC system that during the night when your off-peak hours and energy load is much less, we're making ice, that old technology
that
of ice. And during the day when it's hot outside and when energy prices are higher, we're melting the ice to help cool the building through one of our stealth air-cooled systems. So, you know, that's a technology. Who would have thought? It's pretty simple. It's a very simple concept. And, you know, it should be used everywhere. We should be using these common sense approaches more often.
And what is old is new again.
Exactly, yeah.
So many of the green building technologies that are being advocated for today are technologies that were used when civilization was being developed. And so it's wonderful to see these are not necessarily outrageous technologies. We're just bringing them back and putting new spins with new knowledge.
Is that why you can say, Gil, that growing up in Davidson influenced how you're building in Louisville? You're just recycling old ideas, or is there more to it than that?
Well, I mean, you know, think about the tourism value, the economic development value of Davidson's Main Street. I mean, I went to Kindred yesterday. I was in Davidson yesterday visiting my folks, and there's restaurants popping up all along Main Street. That's the, you know, that's the one strip of 100-year-old buildings, and there's great walkability, and there's also other links to public transportation and walkability that go into some of the LEED, you know, points that you can get. You know, building a building or rehabbing a building on a bus line helps get you a point, whereas building a green building in the middle of nowhere where people are going to expend a lot of carbon to get there, you don't get that same point.
What was the tipping point? Because there had to be a time when encouraging people to build green or revitalize older buildings in a green fashion was something that they looked at you kind of strange, or they thought it's going to cost too much money, I'm not doing this. What was the tipping point where developers, builders, architects, owners decided this makes sense economically and for the environment?
I mean, maybe the recession in 2008 where everybody started getting more penny conscious and thinking about, you know, costs.
Has the tide turned to the point where it's kind of unstoppable, that this is the like a snowball that will get bigger and bigger as we roll down the road here?
One of the objectives of the U.S. Green Building Council was to transform the building community, transform the way buildings were designed, built, and operated. And in part, we've achieved that mission because whether a building is pursuing LEED certification or not, it is thinking more about how to make that space more energy efficient, how to make that space more water efficient, how to use products that support the local economy, and how to use products that don't off-gas harsh toxins into the indoor environment.
I also think that the tipping point was when owners of buildings, whether it's a home or a commercial building, started to see real returns on their investment. I mean, people want value. You can get it's easy to get stamps on things to say you purchase an Energy Star appliance, but does it really use less energy? That's the the proof's in the pudding, and so that's what a LEED building is.
Are there tax incentives for many of these things that people do to become green? There were for a while, and there may still be federal tax incentives for solar, but are there and should there be?
Depending on where you are across the country, there are local, state, and then there are some national tax benefits still available. So I would encourage you to seek those out because you can take advantage of those that would make your project even more economical.
Emily Schofield is Executive Director of the North Carolina Chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council. Scott Chu is Founder and Executive Director of the Center for Energy Development and Sustainability at Ingersoll Rand in Davidson. And Gil Holland is a green developer from Davidson working in Louisville who will be the keynote speaker at the Green Gala on Friday night at the Ritz-Carlton. Information about that on our website. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our engineer is Joey Sprinkle. For more information about archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, or to continue the conversation online, visit our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks.
And support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Charlotte School of Law, hosting a societal impact fair September 17th, 5:30 to 7:30, showcasing programs that offer complimentary legal services to